Welcome, listeners, to another exciting episode of our podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, Dan Brownshire, a seasoned entrepreneur and the mastermind behind ChannelKey, a tech-enabled agency specializing in Amazon Marketplace management. In this episode, we dive deep into Dan's journey, which begins with an interesting shift from the medical and healthcare industry to the dynamic world of e-commerce. Dan shares his bold move of starting over in Las Vegas, learning the ropes of Amazon from the ground up, and building ChannelKey from a two-person team to a powerhouse in the industry. Dan discusses how ChannelKey grew from its humble beginnings into a leading agency in Amazon Marketplace management, providing comprehensive services like catalog optimization, ad spend management, and strategic business planning. Dan elaborates on the challenges and complexities of operating on Amazon, emphasizing it's far from a passive income venture. He shares insights into how the platform's dynamic nature requires agility and smart decision-making. We explored the current market trends, including the impact of events like potential TikTok bans and shifts in the retail media landscape. Dan provides his perspective on how these changes affect businesses and agencies like ChannelKey. A significant part of our conversation revolves around how Amazon uses customer data and how it impacts brands. Dan talks about the delicate balance Amazon maintains in sharing data with brands while retaining control. Dan shares insights on the valuation of Amazon businesses and the subsequent market correction. He predicts future trends and opportunities in the space. An interesting aspect of our talk is how ChannelKey adapted to remote work during the pandemic, enhancing their company culture and work dynamics in the process. Stay tuned as we explore these fascinating topics with Dan, gaining valuable insights into the world of Amazon, e-commerce, and the journey of building a successful business in this ever-evolving digital age. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Hey Dan, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Eitan. Happy to be here.
Yes, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Can't complain. Living the life here in Las Vegas. Vegas is good. Springtime in Las Vegas. Very nice.
Actually between events, right? Like Amazon event and Shop Talk next week.
Yeah, I was at Prosper last week, which was in Vegas, and then I head to Shop Talk next week, which is also in Vegas. So pretty lucky that I don't have to travel. Give them travel budget, you know, get to sleep in my own bed, see my kids.
It's nice. You have more working. I don't know if it's good or bad, but you have more working hours than others in the industry these days, I guess.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Just less travel. Exactly. How was Prosperous? I mean, how was the Amazon event last week?
Amazon event was good. It was well trafficked. There was a lot of good content. It's always good to see kind of friends in the space, and people that you've met online or seen on LinkedIn, and you see them in person for the first time, and you feel like you know that person, even though it's the first time you've ever you know you've actually met them in person. So you get a lot of that. But it was good. It was good. It was well trafficked. I was a little concerned it would be down, but it didn't appear to be down at all. It appeared to be up and a lot of good energy around the event. So it was good.
Yes. I mean, it's good to go back to physical event, right? Meet people, like real people.
It is. I'm a huge proponent of remote work for certain business types, especially mine. Yeah. But it doesn't replace meeting people face to face, right? They're both good for different reasons. And it's always good to, you know, break bread or see people live. Certainly a different experience.
So Dan, we have a very, very interesting topic today. I mean, you've built a whole business around Amazon, right? So let's start with you, with your journey and, you know, about the company that you've built, which is really amazing. And you can start from whenever you want that you feel is relevant. Right.
Yeah. So it was, I currently run an agency called ChannelKey. We're a full service channel management agency. We work with brands and manufacturers and support them on the Amazon marketplace. So we're running Amazon businesses, right? Full service, catalog, graphics, analytics, forecasting, full funnel ad management, DSP, very high level strategic business planning and execution. And my journey started on Amazon, and at least within e-commerce, in 2008. So I was on a train in Munich, Germany. I was at a friend's bachelor party, and my friend had started a business with his then girlfriend, who they decided to sell these things called purse hooks, right? So women don't want to put their purses on the ground at a restaurant or wherever. And so they have these hooks. You hook them to a table and you hang your purse or bag or whatever from this purse hook. They started sourcing these purse hooks on Alibaba and sell them on eBay. So on this train, we had a discussion. I said, why don't we do this for a different type of product? Like, why don't we do this for money clips or cufflinks? And the intention was for it to be a side hustle, a side business. And for me, at least, was, hey, I want to learn how to sell stuff on the internet. That's cool. That's interesting. Let's figure it out. So that's what we did. And I was immediately talking to factories in China and sourcing boxes of different cufflinks and different types and shapes and sizes. And some perhaps maybe violated some trademarks along the way. But that's what we did, and started selling on eBay. So it was all private label, side hustle. I had a full-time job, right? So on my afternoons and evenings, I would go to the post office, and I was packing up orders, taking photos of products, listing them, packing up orders, shipping orders out, right, in my spare time. My partner moved to Las Vegas in 2009, 2010. He started attending trade shows, like category trade shows. So one of the cool things about Vegas, we talked about this, is there's, you know, so many trade shows come through here. So you can go to the pet show here, you can go to the fashion show or Magic, which is a lot of, you know, clothing, fashion accessories, soft leather goods. So we started buying branded merchandise in 2009, 2010 from very well-known brands like Tommy Hilfiger or Kenneth Cole. And we go to those guys, these trade shows, and we would buy their products. And we started selling on Amazon as a reseller. And I don't think any of us knew how prolific Amazon would ultimately become. And at that point, it was very much the wild, wild west, right? The ad business was nascent. FBA was in its very early days. And, you know, like pretty much anything went, right? So when we started doing that, the business exploded. In a good way, right? So as a reseller in 2010 of branded merchandise, I mean, the business went crazy. I mean, we doubled every single year for 3-4 years in a row. And it was great. Hired a bunch of people, hired a bunch of buyers, expanded into different categories as a reseller.
And that's exclusively on Amazon.
We spun up a bunch of micro websites along the way. Because you go into these, talk to these brands, and it was really interesting. So we'd walk into these trade show booths with an iPad, right? And we'd look on our iPads, and the salespeople would want to show us their entire assortment. You know, it was 50 different handbags. And our buyers, who they had never met before, would say, you know, I only want that handbag and that handbag, right? And I'm going to cut you a $10,000 PO right now.
Wow.
And they were like, "What? Who are you? Like, what are you doing?" Right. And so part of what we did was we would spin up these micro websites that were category specific, right? Okay. And say, "Hey, Tommy, we're Wallet Nation. We are a e-com retailer, and we would sell these products on our website. And we would also sell them on Amazon." Right. So that was kind of what we did for a long time. And the business did really well. Ultimately, we had to pivot, Eitan, right? Because what happened was there was low barriers to entry on Amazon. Other people came in and started doing what we were doing. And we were ultimately trading commodities, right? And you'd buy into a SKU and it would work for 30 days or whatever, and then the bottom would fall out because everybody's just competing on price.
Yes.
And so we pivoted and went to these brands and said, hey, listen, Tommy, let us be your exclusive seller of this product or all your products. And in exchange for that exclusivity, we're going to hold price and we're going to manage your catalog. And we're going to optimize your catalog. And we're going to manage your ad spend, build your storefront, all these things. And so that was the first time ever we had really focused on doing extra services or extra work for brands.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we were still buying the product, right? So they gave us exclusivity, but we were purchasing the inventory. And that worked for a while. And simultaneously, we were working on private label as well. Okay. So we were trying to create a moat around our business. And being a reseller, in our opinion, was not the way to do that. Doing retail arbitrage was not the way to do that. The way to do that was to either do exclusive distribution or do private label. Okay. And ultimately, what we landed on was we liked the exclusive distribution model, but it broke in a lot of cases because the exclusivity was incumbent upon the brand being able to control their market and their distribution.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, they struggled with that. And brands still struggle with gray market. So for us, we'd buy the product, we'd hold price, but we couldn't win the buy box because there are other people selling the item for cheaper.
Yeah.
So we said, you know what? If we're going to sell, if we're going to buy inventory and sell inventory, it has to be via private label. We have to own the brand. We have to control the distribution. We have to get the low costing directly from the manufacturer.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. And then all the brand relationships, we said, you know what? There's a viable opportunity here to create a service-based model to help brands create best-in-class Amazon businesses. Mm-hmm. And that was the genesis of Channel Key, right? So we baited Channel Key at the product business for a year. We're successful. And then we officially spun Channel Key out in January of 2017 as a separate entity, my same partners. And fast forward to today, we've got about 85 people on our team. We're fully remote and do very high level, very high, sophisticated work for some very well-known brands across the world.
Wow. Amazing journey. I guess doing business on Amazon is not a passive income business, right? Many people think it's passive. It's a hard lot of work, right? And you need to be very, very smart and agile always.
It is 100% not a passive income business.
Yeah, of course.
And it requires capital, which I think a lot of people don't understand, especially younger entrepreneurs want to sell a product because they can. And what's really cool about Amazon is they've basically democratized the ability to launch businesses and sell products on the internet. It's amazing, but they've also removed barriers to entry. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of competition and you have to buy inventory. So if you sell $100,000 worth of goods, amazing, but it doesn't mean you have $100,000. You've got to replan and refund your inventory and access to capital becomes a really big pain point. So not passive in my opinion.
Of course not. Of course, in my opinion as well, it's really, really difficult. So I'm very, very interested in Channel Key and the way you structured the business. I know you're fully remote, 85 people, right? You have probably a type of culture that you've built and, you know, pay a lot of attention to. I mean, tell me, how is it working?
Yeah, good question. So we had an office in Las Vegas and all of our staff was here. We were toying with the idea of a remote program and we were testing it. And then COVID hit and it forced us to go remote, which we did. And it's really interesting. We simultaneously spun up an office in the Philippines right when that was all happening.
Okay.
And I remember vividly that I was going to go to the Philippines to meet our new team. and I had young kids at the time. And my wife said, absolutely not. You're not going to the Philippines because there was a big volcano eruption that happened that January of COVID. And then, so I said, you're right. I'm not going to go to the Philippines because of this volcano eruption. And then 30 days later, COVID hit and everything shut down. Right. It's just crazy how that happened. So we've been running remote ever since. And I personally believe it's a competitive advantage for us, for certainly for our business type. And I also believe that our culture has improved. It's actually gotten better since we went into a remote work environment. We've got Inc. Best Places to Work a couple of years back, which is voted on by our staff. So we're doing, I think, remote pretty well. And I think the core element for us is culture and building a culture around specific values that you believe in. And we've done that. And I think if I had to say what the heart is of our culture, it's around transparency, honest and effective communication, vulnerability. Like that's what speaks to me. And I think that's what speaks to our team. And those are the types of people that we hire. And we create space for people to interact with each other, which I think is absolutely critical. Like recurring meetings where the team is able to connect in an informal way and communicate with each other. We require all meetings internally and externally, we're on camera, right? Yeah. Because I want to see you. I want to see your nonverbal communication. I want to see if your child runs into your office. I want to see if your cat jumps on your desk, and I want to see what's in your background. Like, I feel like that's a very, very intimate environment. And I don't think people talk about that, right? It's one thing to show up at an office and everybody has their uniform on and they're in their office, but it's another thing to actually be in people's homes and see what is going on in their home. That's intimate to me. And so we like for our team to be on camera because we want to see, right? I want to see if you're having a good day or a bad day. And I just want to see, right? That's part of communicating. So for us, we've done it. It's hard, especially globally. It's hard. And it's fluid and it's dynamic. And there's good days and there's bad days. But it's always rooted in our values.
Very, very nice. I mean, is it more fit to a certain type of generation or is it more Gen Z team or is it a mix?
We have a mix. I don't actually know what the average age is of our team, but it's probably somewhere between, it's probably upper 20s, younger 30s. So I don't know if that's really, I don't know if that contributes, right, to our ability to execute or deliver the culture the way we do it or not. We hire the folks that we think are the best fit, right, from a technical perspective as well as a behavior and a culture perspective.
Yes, yes. In terms of the business, then, I understand that there are a lot of brands out there that are from the get-go, went directly to Amazon and build their entire business on Amazon, right? And definitely we see now in the post-pandemic era, we see a lot of brands where the majority of their business was on their own website and going multi-channel, willing to sacrifice their margin to probably compete better or even generate more opportunities for more and more channels. I mean, how do you see the market in terms of your customer base or in terms of your potential that you see right there, right now, maybe for 2024? Is it mostly, existing companies? Do you see any new ventures that are launching on Amazon?
Yeah, good question. So most of our clients play in the SMB and enterprise space, right? So they're existing brands that are distributed outside of Amazon. Could be on their .com. It could be in brick and mortar. You know, they might have a large wholesale business. That's mostly where we play. And I think that Amazon is still very much an amazing and a viable channel, right? There's so much commerce happening. I think I just saw a stat recently. It's 40% of all e-commerce, 90% of all marketplace business in the US, right? It's massive.
Yeah.
And that's not going anywhere, right? It's getting more complex. Their media business is getting more complex. It's getting more expensive to participate on the platform, right? So I think there's continual margin shrinkage for brands that operate on the Amazon platform. And that's if you're a seller or a vendor, to your point. So I think there the opportunities right now for Amazon and the growth and movement is a lot of it's related to their media business and what's happening with DSP and what's happening with Prime Video and what's happening with streaming TV. I think that's where a lot of the activity is, a lot of the action is right now. And then from a channel perspective, we've always wanted Walmart.com to perform. Right. We've always wanted it to be a viable alternative. And I think if there was a viable alternative to Amazon, it is Walmart. It has to be for a lot of different reasons. And I think they're making strides and they're progressing and it's certainly moving in the right direction. Not nearly the opportunity today that we see with Amazon still. They're still behind. And then we're also seeing a lot of movement in TikTok and TikTok Shop, specific to certain categories. And we're not experts in that field. We've got partners that do a lot of that work for clients if they need it. But health, beauty, fashion are good categories for TikTok Shop.
Yes. Yes. I mean, TikTok Shop is very good for products, probably up to $100. Something that you can see real transformation within like 30 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. Cosmetics or some kind of a nice gadget that can trigger that impulse purchase. And exactly. Obviously you've been to all this trend, right? You've been to the trend of, let's say, when Apple decided to stop with cookies or we are in a cookieless world, right? And then said, okay, only Amazon has the first party data. Let's all go to Amazon. Now you see the TikTok hype, right? TikTok is want to steal Amazon business. How do you see these, events that are happening?
Yeah, I think that competition is good. Right. Yeah. I think it's good for everybody. And I think Amazon is really well positioned because of their Prime base. Okay. Because of the flywheel they've created and because of the infrastructure they've created. Right. People still want convenience. They still want their products in the same day or in 2-day delivery. They still want to be able to return it. It's really much. Are very much a trusted brand, one of the most trusted brands. And so I think there's always going to be a lot of noise. And I think competition is great and it will be helpful to everybody. But the brands that truly have created a moat around their business and have an infrastructure in place that can deliver on the customer promise continually over and over again are going to win, right? That's why I think Walmart's viable. They've got a tremendous real estate footprint that they can leverage and a trusted brand. And I think TikTok will do well. It's just targeting a different type of consumer and shopping journey that's different. Now, what's going to happen? Ultimately, I don't know. Right? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's viable. People clearly want to consume content and want to shop that way, which is great. Same thing with Temu and Shein. Right? It's a different model. It's a totally different model. Now, how sustainable is it? How long-term is it? Are those Amazon killers? No, I absolutely think they're not Amazon killers because the value prop for Prime is just too good. And the infrastructure that they've got in place right now is just too good. It's too good. And they spent years losing money to develop that for this moment. And it's working.
Interesting. Maybe they are Amazon boosters, right? Because that triggers more innovation and more alternatives. You mentioned Prime, and obviously we know that Walmart are going after Vizio now and actually approve acquiring Vizio. So let's talk about the retail media. Is it like a really, definitely in a cookieless world, something that brands are obviously trying to use and exploit and working with Amazon, correct?
Absolutely. The in my opinion, part of what Amazon is really becoming is a data company, right? And they've got some of the best first-party customer data on the planet, certainly in the US.
Yes.
It's not stitched together, right? In most cases, I mean, they have, for the consumer the consumer cohort, certainly in the United States, they have data on everybody, whether it's through what you buy or what you purchase or what you watch on television. They know who you are. They know where you live. They know how many kids you have. They know their ages. They know if you're having significant life events, right? They know everything. And so what's really interesting about their ads business to me, specifically their DSP programmatic business, is they're allowing brands that either sell a product on Amazon or don't, they might sell a service, they're allowing brands to monetize that data, which is really cool and interesting, right? Plus, they have so many owned and operated sites and or platforms that can be leveraged to where it's really powerful, right? And they're still working through the attribution and leveraging things like Amazon Marketing Cloud, right? To really create that connectivity. But man, they've got the honey hole of data and the opportunities to leverage that are endless. And what Walmart's acquisition of Vizio is interesting, right? Yeah. And there's a reason why televisions are so cheap right now. Like, you can go pick up a big television for not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They're all smart. And guess what? They're all consuming and ingesting all of your data while you're in front of that screen. So it's all about the data. It's a total data play. And then you think about AI and what's happening with AI. Well, guess what? Now that there's all this data and we've got AI to layer on top of it, it can be really powerful and interesting what can be created from that. So retail media is obviously exploding. It's a super hot topic, very sexy topic. Everybody's building out their own kind of retail media network right now. And I think that will absolutely continue, yes, right? Because of the data and the aggregation of data.
Correct. And again, in the retail media discussion, it's the same. It's again, the same Amazon, right? This is the major discussion around retail media. Yes. Yep. Walmart are jumping also to the opportunity, but there is like a long tail of retailers, right? I mean, it's not easy to move from brick and mortar managing offline store to become an advertising media network, right? So, I mean,
right,
the transition is not that straightforward.
And, no,
and that discussions around data, I think, is very, very important. So Amazon definitely controls all the data. They are providing this data for advertisers to use first-party data to target better on the advertising and AMC side of things. But on the other side, what brands are getting in terms of the business? Because the data is still at Amazon. Amazon is sharing some of this data with brands. And what is the, you know, the other way around in terms of the data usage?
So historically, Amazon has held everything very close to the chest.
Yeah.
Right. Their data, their like in the retail business, they didn't want you to leave their platform. Right. They did not want you to leave. Okay. But they're but it's changing. Right. It's become less transactional and more about brand building. You know, they've rolled things out like Buy with Prime. Right. So they're allowing brands to put a widget on their Shopify site or website to leverage.
Yes.
You know, Amazon's fulfillment network.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the data, they're also doing some of that. Now they're not telling you who these consumers are.
Yeah.
You don't get their name, you don't get their email address, but they're allowing you to create audiences based on signals, right, that might represent a cohort that you're looking to target or go after based on your product type or what your strategy is with your media spend. So
kind of a persona definition, right? Of certain types or so. Yeah.
That's right. So not selling the data. You can't go to Amazon and say, I want to buy a list from you.
No.
You can't do that. They won't do that. And it's smart of them not to do it. They're controlling the data and they are allowing brands to monetize that in a controlled environment.
Interesting. It's kind of a delicate balance, right? They want to keep the data. Otherwise, people will move out of Amazon because if they have all the details of the consumers, right? On the other, on the other hand, they want to keep the brand right on the platform and providing them a lot of services and values. I mean, there's so many things that you can do, like on an AMC side, it just does the advertising. They're providing a lot of services for a brand, not just the marketing or advertising aspect. So I think this will continue to evolve more and more just to be kind of a holistic partner for brand, right?
Yeah. Again, moving in the past, Amazon, certainly in the early days we talked about, it was very transactional. You come for the transaction. Yeah. But I think Amazon is increasingly becoming a brand discovery and brand building marketplace. And they're leaning into brands, right? They're allowing brands to tell their story through video or through their storefront or through whatever. Yes. I think it's a smart play. And if you allow those brands to access really good cohort data or persona data, it becomes even more compelling, right? And especially if that brand is having a hard time with Meta or Google or whatever, well, there's a ton of traffic on Amazon. People are buying. It's not going anywhere. And if the attribution's better, then it becomes a really good option.
Sure. And it's true that this type of, this level of data and knowledge and insights are not that easy to get, right? I need to be some kind of an expert on working with the Amazon tools, right? To get, and this is where ChannelKey obviously comes into place, right?
Yeah. So we're a tech enabled agency and we use some of the best tech that exists on the marketplace, right? That allows us API access, visibility, reporting, all of these elements to access the data, but there's a lot of it. And so part of what you get when working with somebody like us is we know where to look and what to look for, right? And so we're not drowning in this mass amount of just hard data. No, we know what to look for specifically based on your product type, your category, what your goals are, et cetera. Sure. So it can be overwhelming.
I mean, if you look at the Shopify ecosystem, right, it just probably killed so many agencies out there, right, when Shopify was launched and now with Shopify Plus. And I mean, Shopify announced probably a few weeks ago in their quarterly call that they are supporting their agents and they want to provide more tools to the agencies and they see them as a strategic partners for the future. How's it on the Amazon side? I mean, what tools you are getting for Amazon? I mean, are they supporting you, providing you? I mean, they have like a joint vision together. I mean, what's going on in the Amazon environment?
Yeah. So, in my world, Amazon, we were the Amazon on two fronts. Okay. One side is their retail business and the other side is their ads business. And they're totally different, right? Oh. Different teams, different office locations, right? So when we're interfacing with clients and working with clients, if they're sellers, mostly vendors, we're dealing with vendor managers and helping with vendor negotiations and doing all those sorts of things. But most of the partnership is coming from the ads side of the business. And we've seen that change over the years, where Amazon, especially on the ads business, is very much leaning into their partners, right? And we're one of them, right? They've got a partner portal and program and ranking system and all of these things, and we're part of that. We're part of that program. And I know they've put leadership in place over the last couple of years to really develop that program and look at people like us as an agency and or their tech partners as actual partners. And so we have somebody to talk to. They get us access to various beta programs. They talk to us about what's coming down the pipeline. I was in New York in December last year for an upper funnel workshop, right? Where we're talking about upper funnel. We're talking about non-endemic DSP, right? And it's very much a working session where they want feedback from their agency partners to help them to develop their either go-to-market strategy or the next piece of technology or whatever. So Amazon is looking at groups like us as partners, especially on the ads business right now. And it's great because we are, and we're viewing them as partners as well. In the past, I don't want to say it was more adversarial, but it was like, we need help. And it's not always easy to get help. And it's still, it's hard on the retail side still.
Okay.
Right. They're still operating that way. But on the ad side, they're leaning into their partners.
Interesting. By the way, there was just a new release of like eMarketer just released a report. What will happen if Trump will ban TikTok, right?
Yeah.
Like the two winners obviously are Amazon and Meta Group, right? Going to grab all that money. So good times ahead for you. Let's see. In any of the scenarios, you're in good shape. So really great to hear that.
Yeah. We're fortunate at the time. I don't know what's going to happen with TikTok. I'd be really surprised if it got banned.
And interesting, they did a report on it, right? And it's just speculation at this stage.
Yeah. Well, I think they just like passed something in the House just passed about a TikTok ban.
That's another politics, I guess. Politics, too much politics involved.
That's right.
So what about brands? I mean, during the pandemic, we saw like crazy valuations, right? That founders ask for obviously people are more realistic these days. I mean, do you still see some exits event or do you foresee them in the future?
Yeah. So the company I helped co-found, or the product business, we actually sold that business in the summer of 2021. All private label, larger business. It was great. It's great for us. It's great timing. There was a lot of activity at that time, right? Capital was pouring in, debt was pouring in, and everybody was aggregating these Amazon brands. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea was to create the next, you know, Procter & Gamble or Holtco, right? And conceptually and on paper, you know, I think that's a reasonable thesis. But as we're seeing, right, Thrasio just announced their bankruptcy and there's others that are struggling. It's hard to aggregate disparate companies together, product businesses together that are in all different categories, that have all different supply chains and all different nuances. So the valuations have fallen off a cliff. And I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon, right? I don't foresee that changing. On the product side of things, I think there's still a lot of demand right now for tech and service. But the product side is struggling quite a bit. But there are some winners that are doing well. Like, I think those that focus on a specific category or niche or vertical are doing well. And I think there today is an opportunity, and we're already seeing this with some consolidation, an opportunity to swoop up perhaps some really good assets, really cheap. But I think there was a lot of fervor for that year to 2 year span where everybody was gobbling up these brands and paying really good multiples, which is great for all these entrepreneurs. But I think that was a moment in time, and these aggregators realized how hard it is to run these Amazon brands. Amazon in and of itself is very challenging to deal with. And then you throw in different competitor or competition profiles within certain categories and these nuanced supply chains, as well as post-COVID, the costs to do business on Amazon skyrocketed, right? And the demand didn't sustain. I think it's created this environment where these businesses became unprofitable. They finally got all the inventory in they were waiting for. Demand fell because the world opened back up a bit. And there's a tale of problems that whole dynamic created, which is opportunistic. You can be opportunistic in that environment. I think certain people are the ones that are executing well and that are well-funded are doing great, and they'll continue to do great. But I don't think we'll go back and see that type of fervor environment again.
Yeah,
that was a moment in time.
We have a short memory. I truly believe it will come back sometime, but I don't know exactly when.
I don't know either. Like, I don't think, yeah. I still think it's very viable to build an Amazon business and an Amazon brand. I think that's that is very viable, and that's okay. Not going to go anywhere. Right. Sure. But to see the amount of deal flow and the multiples that were happening at that time, I would be surprised. I hope it happens again. That'd be great, but yeah. I would be surprised.
It seems that everyone are going like back to the basics. They're like zooming in to every piece of data or information they have, analyzing every SKU, every market, trying to make the strong stronger, eliminate a lot of non-profitable activities, right? And it's tough. I mean, people are realizing also the difference between cash flow and free cash flow. Obviously, you have a cash flow, which is probably written in the books, but it's obviously invested in some kind of an inventory, right? So the amount of money that you left, you know, after all this activity is probably on the lower side these days. And demand, it's something that needs to be evolved more.
It's always about the fundamentals, Eitan. Always. Yeah. You know, and I think it's hard because there can be these moments and times where people are really excited or the market's up, right? Or the inverse of that, where the market's down or there's just a lot of bearish activity. Yeah. And I think the key always is you have to stay in the middle. Stay somewhere in the middle and focus on operating. Operating well and operating in a way that's focused on the fundamentals. That's exactly. Always, I mean, you have to revert back to that.
Yeah. And definitely we're in an environment where, you know, the expectation is to perform well, grow, but grow with profitability, right? So that's more operational focus type of activities.
Yeah.
Definitely it's different than, you know, things that we saw during the pandemic when everything almost worked, right? Without any too much, you know, spending time on analyzing how it works, but it worked. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was so crazy, right? There's so much uncertainty in that period of time.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody knew what was going to happen. I mean, there was a moment we thought we were going to go out of business because we didn't know. What is, are we going to be able to operate? Are we going to be able to sell? Like, what's going to happen? It turned out to be okay.
Yeah.
Right? But you just don't know.
Sure.
You don't know.
Yes. Amazing, Dan. Anything else that we've missed that you want to add?
Anything else? I don't know, Eitan. I don't have any burning topics for you.
Good. So now we're moving to the personal part of the episode. Okay. I would love you to share, you know, things that you are proud of in your career.
Yeah.
And maybe some of the major lessons you can share with us.
Yeah, let's see. what am I proud of from my career? A couple things. One is I made a pretty big transition into e-commerce. I graduated from university and had a really nice job and built a really nice business in the medical and healthcare industry.
Wow.
And I was living in Ohio and then decided after building a nice, really nice business for myself to give it away and completely change my life.
Wow.
Moving to Las Vegas with my then girlfriend, who's now my wife. We've got two beautiful 6-year-old twins. Mm-hmm. And really starting over, right? And learning Amazon from the ground up. And so I'm proud I was able to pivot and do that and take that risk because it was a big risk. I was giving up a lot and rolling the dice and it worked out. And I'm proud of what we've built at Channel Key. I mean, we literally, there was two of us when we started. There's two people. Mm-hmm. And then we've grown to where we're at today, completely self-funded. We've just closed a second acquisition. We've got some amazing clients. My staff is the best in the business. And so I'm proud of what we've built. I'm proud of my team. I'm proud of the culture that we've built. And I just feel so much gratitude that I get to grow a business alongside such really talented people. And it's not always easy. Like, there's some hard days. There's some really good days too. Mm-hmm. But we work through it together, right? And there's a sense of community around that. And I'm proud of the community that we've built.
Dan, this is a time for you to share a fun fact about yourself.
Okay, fun fact about me. Let's see. I'm a certified scuba diver. Although I don't get to dive much right now with my kids. And I've been diving with great white sharks before.
What? Really?
Great white sharks, yeah. And I was cage diving.
Cage diving. Okay, so yeah. It's on purpose. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was amazing. It was amazing.
You were afraid, excited, relaxed.
Yeah. What? Yes.
All of the above.
All of the above. Yeah. All the above. We were it was in Mexico. I lived on a boat for 4 days and we were 30 feet down in a cage, you know, surrounded by these massive predators, and it was unreal.
Amazing.
And really a really cool experience. So
great. Dan, thank you. Thank you for sharing. And again, thank you for an amazing episode. Really, really interesting. I'm really impressed and super excited about what you've built, and wish you all the best. Great 2024, and keep going. It looks amazing.
Hey, Tom, I appreciate you having me. That was fun. would come back in a heartbeat. So thank you.
Yes. Maybe probably next episode is about bootstrapping, right?
We have plenty there you
of
go.
Things to talk about.
Yeah, we can talk about.
Okay.
Yeah.
See you soon. Thanks, Dan. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.